I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. Film fanatics are filling out their ballots for Sunday night's Academy Award show hosted this year by Ellen DeGeneres. Well, Chiwetel Ejiofor, the star of 12 Years a Slave, beat out Christian Bale, who stars in American Hustle? Does Cate Blanchett have a lock on the Best Actress Oscar for her performance in Woody Allen's Blue Jasmine? And how about Jared Leto for his supporting role in Dallas Buyers Club? The biggest unknown is what will win in the Best Picture category. Gravity, 12 Years, The Wolf of Wall Street, Nebraska, American Hustle. There are nine contenders. We have two film critics to preview the Oscars and share their movie and performance picks. Gary Kramer writes for Philadelphia Gay News, the Philadelphia City Paper, also for Cinadelphia. And Gary Kramer, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you.
Also with us is Piers Marchand. He's a Philadelphia-based contributor critic for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, the film critic for 215mag.com, and also for phillymag.com. And Piers Marchand, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you.
And to our listeners, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Piers, let me begin with you. And looking back even over the pictures that are nominated and the year in general, seems like 2013 was a good year for movies. Agree?
Yes, I would. I think it's been kind of a banner year. In fact, the last 2 years have really been pretty spectacular. The kind of thing, as a critic, you don't want to get too used to, because you know there is bound to be a disappointing year coming up.
But it seems that we're talking about a kind of a diversity of films. Even Gary, looking at the films nominated for Best Picture, they really cover the gamut.
Yeah. What's interesting this year, I think, is that there are a lot of independent films, which has been sort of more of the trend, and yet now they're telling us that there are too many movies being made. And there's there's been a lot of buzz on the internet about this in IndieWire and other publications, saying that we need to have less movies because there's a glut of product. And yet some of the really great indie films like Short Term 12, which got some Oscar buzz or Independent Spirit nominations, aren't getting the Oscar nominations because they don't have the big studio support. So I think that's where the trends are going to start to happen, is that the independent films are either going to fall off the wayside, and it's going to be more studio Hollywood-based Oscar-type candidates versus the sort of independent films.
Piers, going back to you, and I think we should just say, you know, in terms of who gets to vote for the Oscars, we're not talking about people that make independent films. We're largely talking about older white men, as I understand it.
That is about right. The Academy is trying to diversify themselves. I think they have made strides in the last couple of years. They still have a ways to go. And as Gary says, I think the independent movement, as it stands now, seems fairly robust. But we will see over the next few years what's going to happen as far as studio budgets go.
What do you think about Ellen DeGeneres hosting?
She's done it before. She's good. She's got a lot of attention on her show, so I think she's a popular host. I think she's got to be careful with 12 Years a Slave jokes. There's been some comments about that from other award programs, that some jokes have fallen flat or been insensitive, and that's something that we'll have to watch this year.
What do you think, Piers?
That particular movie is very, and to its credit, is absolutely serious. It is not lend itself to cheap shots. So I would hope they would know better than to go there.
Well, we're going to do this show backwards. The way the Oscars go, they do the best picture near the end of the show. We're going to start with it. These are the nominated films: American Hustle, Captain Phillips, Dallas Buyers Club, Gravity, Her, Nebraska, Philomena, 12 Years a Slave, and The Wolf of Wall Street. Again, Piers, you know, and this seems to be the category that people are saying they don't know who or what is going to win.
I think, to the best of my understanding, it pretty much is going to come down to Gravity and 12 Years a Slave. And the interesting thing about that, I think, is what the different polls that each film represents. Gravity, for my money, was easily the most spectacular film, the biggest spectacle that I saw last year. I saw it twice, and both times it just went by in a whoosh. It was gorgeous. It was the effects were completely enervating. It was for spectacle's sake, it was phenomenal. 12 Years a Slave, very, very different film. going to a completely different point, obviously, and incredibly important in that it is a film about slavery made by a black man.
A Brit,
and a very talented one. And I think the effect of this is a very sobering and realistic depiction of what slavery is and what it has done to entire cultures.
I do want to play a clip from 12 Years a Slave, but first to you, Gary, as you look at this list, what jumps out at you?
Well, American Hustle is probably my favorite film on the list. I mean, it's just the most enjoyable. It's like The Sting, you know, which was another Oscar winner. And it has the most nominations, so you would think that would have the most weight. But I really think it's a lock for 12 Years a Slave. I'm very surprised that Gravity has any kind of edge, because although it is, as you say, a spectacle, and I do really love that film, I think Gravity is going to get the best director, and they're going to split between best picture and best director. One's going to go to Slave and one's going to go to Gravity. And that's sort of how the trend has been recently. And I think of, like, you know, Crash and Brokeback Mountain, right, or some of these other films, like, you know, over the past couple of years. So I'm really surprised there's a question.
Well, let's play a scene from 12 Years a Slave. And this is Chiwetel Ejiofor. He plays Solomon Northrup. And here he is with the wife of the slave owner, Epps, played by Sarah Paulson. Let's listen.
This is a list of goods and sundries. You will take it to be filled and return immediately. Take your tag. Tell Bartholomew to add it to our debt.
Yes, miss.
Where are you from, Platt?
I told you.
Tell me again.
Washington.
Who were your master?
Master name of Freeman.
Was he a learned man?
I suppose so.
He learned you to read?
A word here or there. But I've no understanding of the written text.
Don't trouble yourself with it. Same as the rest, master bought you here to work, that's all. Any more, I'll earn you 100 lashes.
And again, a scene from 12 Years a Slave. We've played that scene several times on Radio Times, and it scares me. She's I'm surprised she wasn't nominated, to be perfectly honest with you, Sarah Paulson.
Yeah. Yeah, Gary. The scene where she throws the bottle at Patsy is something that I remember the audience, when I watched it, gasped.
Yeah.
And that kind of power, I think, you know, really comes through in her performance. But I think Chiwetel is incredible in the film, and it's a shame that his performance is so subtle and he's so much reacting as opposed to acting that he's not going to get any kind of, you know, purchase on Matthew McConaughey, who's going to sort of walk away with the award.
Well, and interesting, Piers, I know a number of people that say, I just don't want to see a film that's this graphic and this brutal, which it is.
I well understand that. It screened in Toronto twice. The first screening I did not go to. There was a conflict. And you heard the buzz from critics after it screened, and people were saying it's phenomenal but incredibly difficult to watch, and they cried for hours afterward. And I really had to gear myself up for that second screening. I did go, and I was ready for absolute devastation, and I was actually surprised how much McQueen held back, especially considering his first two movies were a good deal more pitiless.
Oh, gosh, yes, right.
So, yeah.
But he does. He's an artist, and yep. So he makes you watch, which I think is such an interesting thing for a director to do. It's just he makes you watch scenes you don't want to see.
I think it will be an interesting referendum as far as Hollywood goes to comparing 12 Years, if it does win, to Crash, which is was 2005, 2006, which to me, I mean, it supposedly dealt with racism and prejudice, but it was a infantile movie, and the fact that it got rewarded in that way has long irked me. I think 12 Years.
Yeah, but I see 12 Years a Slave more as like a Schindler's List film, where it's, you know, here's one story of a man who had a sort of positive ending with his terrible story. You know, and I think it's going to be rewarded for that reason, that how can you, you know, deny, you know, some prize to this, you know, very important tale, be it slavery, be it the Holocaust or something like that.
Let me play a scene from another film. This is Dallas Buyers Club. Matthew McConaughey, who's also up for a Best Actor Oscar, plays AIDS patient Ron Woodruff, who's setting up a buyers club for AIDS drugs. And Jennifer Garner plays his doctor, Eve Sachs. Let's listen.
What are you doing here? Well, I live here.
Where's Rayon? Your roommates?
Not exactly. What are you doing here?
Roger Thompson. This is my patient. You treating these people?
Oh, they're treating themselves.
With what?
Vitamins, peptide T, DDC, anything but that poison you're hawking. So you ever wear any color? Seems like every time I see you, all I see is white. You got white coat, white shoes, white...
Tell Rayon I was looking for him, and I am telling my patients to stay away from here.
Why?
Excuse me.
So you want to go grab steak sometime? I know it's red.
And that's a scene from a Dallas Buyers Club. Matthew McConaughey up for a Best Actor Oscar, along with Chiwetel Ejiofor, who we were just talking about, Leonardo DiCaprio in The Wolf of Wall Street, Bruce Stern in Nebraska, and Christian Bale in American Hustle. Piers, do you have a pick out of this? These fivesomes?
Well, I think McConaughey pretty much has this one in the bag. I'm not... generally speaking, the hugest DiCaprio fan. I think he can be great, but I think he has for many years assumed he can play any role, and there's certain things he can and certain things he can't do. Almost any movie in which he has to play a caring father or a father who's in any way concerned with their children, it's hard for me to buy into that. All that said, I thought he was great in Wolf of Wall Street, and not just because he shows comic chops. I think he really goes into the role, finds all the little nooks and crannies and aspects of it that make it interesting, mm-hmm. and just completely subsumes himself into the part, which is not something you ordinarily see him do.
What do you think, Gary, about this list?
Yeah, Bruce Dern was fighting to get a nomination in the leading role category as opposed to the supporting role category, and I think if he had done the supporting role, he might have had a shot at an Oscar.
Oh, really?
Because, you know, he really could have given Jared Leto some competition there because of his lifetime of body of work type thing. Christian Bale is nominated for his hair, I think. He's really
good.
You
didn't like his performance?
No, I think he's really good in the film, but his hair really deserves the award.
It's kind of how the film started, right?
Yes. I think Leo's really good in Wolf of Wall Street, and I think he's been great in everything since This Boy's Life, and he's played a lot of golden boys like Howard Hughes in The Aviator for Scorsese and Gatsby earlier last year. And this is sort of like, you know, another one of those kinds of roles, and I think he sort of fits those parts to a T, Catch Me If You Can. I think he's really good in that, too. But it's McConaughey. He's on a hot streak. It's unbelievable. I mean, Mud, Magic Mike, the Terry Letts one, I'm blanking on the name.
Oh, me too.
Oh,
it'll come to us.
Killer Joe?
Killer Joe.
Killer Joe.
Yeah,
exactly.
He's amazing in Killer Joe.
So you think it's Matthew's year for an Oscar?
Yeah, and True Detective, I hear he's amazing, so it's for him.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Gary Kramer, also with us, Piers Marchant, and we are talking about the Oscar-nominated films, performances, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. What and who would get your vote? Give us a call. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Allentown Symphony Orchestra presents Mozart's Requiem, Saturday, March 8th at 8 p.m. and Sunday, March 9th at 3 p.m. Often referred to as his swan song, Mozart's final composition, Requiem, remains one of his most popular works. Introducing the newly formed Allentown Symphony Chorus. Also, cellist Christine Lampria will be featured in Barber's Cello Concerto. Information at millersymphonyhall.org. The Allentown Symphony Orchestra proudly supports WHYY.
I'm Jesse Thorne. Andy Daly's very pleasant-looking in a sort of all-American, unthreatening way, which maybe isn't ideal for stand-up.
It was very clear that the audience was responding to me as a nice little boy.
But luckily he figured something out.
That I could play against the howdy-doody look and surprise people.
Andy Daly does just that on his new TV show. We'll talk on the next Bullseye from NPR.
Tonight at 10 on WHYY.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Next time on Here and Now...
The recommendations I have described will help position us for an era of both strategic and fiscal uncertainty.
Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel downsizes the Army, and military analyst Andrew Bacevich says it's about time. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoen. We are talking about the Oscars on Sunday night, the 86th Academy Awards. Again, our guests are both film critics. Gary Kramer writes for the Philadelphia Gay News, the Philadelphia City Paper, also for Salon.com and Cynadelphia. Piers Marchant writes for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, film critic for 215mag.com, also phillymag.com. And we want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499, or you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times, and tell us who and what you think should get an Academy Award this year. Before we get back to our conversation, we're going to play some of these nominated Best Original Songs, and this is Let It Go, performed by Idina Menzel from Frozen Music, and lyrics by Kristen Anderson Lopez and Robert Lopez. Let's listen.
Let it go.
Little taste of some of the music from Frozen. Again, 1-888-477-9499. We have a couple of clips set up featuring some of these nominated actresses. And for the Best Actress nominations, we have Amy Adams in American Hustle, Cate Blanchett in Blue Jasmine, Sandra Bullock in Gravity, Judi Dench in Philomena, and Meryl Streep. Once again, August and August Osage Avenue. Gary, who out of that list rises to the top for you?
Well, I love Sandra Bullock.
I love Sandra Bullock, and I lose all critical faculty with her films. I just, you know, I watch her and I just melt. So Gravity is my pick. And I think it's not just that it's an impressive visual film. I think she really conveys the survivor's guilt that she has, both about her daughter and about, you know, losing George Clooney in the first 10 minutes. But she's got these incredible scenes of being on screen almost alone the entire time and conveying a real humanity and being very likable and being very desperate and also making you feel for her. And I think it's a performance that you don't expect her to give, and that's part of what makes it so good. And it's, again, subtle, as I said earlier, like Chiwetel in 12 Years a Slave, where she's not overacting. And I think La Streep, as I'll call her, because I really don't...
La Streep.
La Streep, that she capital A acts. And in August, Osage County, she swallows a pill with such effort. You know, I mean, she puts her mouth on it and really shows you that she's doing it. And she doesn't need to overact like that. And I actually think Judi Dench does some of that in Philomena. And both of those nominations are kind of, you know, token nominations, I think.
What do you think, Pierce?
Well, kind of like with McConaughey and Best Actor, I think Cate Blanchett has this one in the bag. I don't disagree with Gary's point about Sandra Bullock. I would also add, actually, that she did this under incredibly difficult technical circumstances. The way they made that film, from an acting standpoint, sounds unbelievably difficult. So you have to give her full credit for that. I actually am – I know a lot of people hated Meryl Streep and in this movie and hated the movie, maybe because I went into it thinking it was going to be some – corn pone, fried green tomatoes kind of thing. I was actually happily surprised at how vitriolic it actually was and how much fury and rage everyone seemed to have against one another. And I thought Meryl Streep played it theatrically, honestly. I mean, it's a very, very theatrical role. It's based on a play. And she played it over-the-top theatrical. I think that was very much by design. So I would give her a little more credit, I think, for that. But honestly, I think Cate Blanchett kind of has this one in the bag. Amy Adams, maybe, for American Hustle. She's kind of a dark horse candidate. Mm-hmm. Possibly she can pull it off.
Well, you know what? I'd like to move some of our clips around here. I do want to play the Cate Blanchett clip. And she, in this clip, plays a narcissistic, penniless former New York socialite. Her marriage has fallen apart, and she's visiting Ginger, her, for lack of a better word, working-class sister, and she lives in San Francisco. The sister played by Sally Hawkins. This, of course, a Woody Allen film, and many people feel Cate Blanchett has a lock on the Oscar. Let's listen.
Then I hear Eddie say he knows a dentist looking for help.
Oh, forget it. Jesus, it's too menial. I go nuts. I want to go back to school. I want to get my degree and become, you know, something substantial. I can't just do some mindless job. Oh, I was forced to take a job selling shoes on Madison Avenue. Oh, so humiliating. Friends I'd had at dinner parties, our apartment came in and I waited on them. I mean, do you have any idea what that's like? No, one minute you're hosting women and the next you're measuring their shoe size and fitting them. Erica Bishop came into the store. She saw me. Was so embarrassed for me. She slipped out thinking I didn't see her. I saw you, Erica!
Wow, a scene from Woody Allen's film featuring Kate Blanchett. What's so interesting about this character and her performance is the character is acting. I mean, this is a woman who doesn't know herself. She's lived in this world. She's completely sort of unmoored because she has lost her status. So she's acting. So here's an actress playing someone who's acting.
Well, it goes back to the theory of the most acting wins the prize. It's the person, I mean, you know, Matthew McConaughey lost all that weight for Dallas Buyers Club, so that's kind of a shoe-in for him. Jared Leto plays a transgender character.
Lost a lot of weight for that,
too. He lost weight, too, so it's a shoe-in. And I think that, you know, Kate Blanchett acts the most, and that's why, you know, she'll beat Sandra Bullock. I think Amy Adams is really the best, you know, in terms of just transformation because of just the look and the hair and the dress, but also her accent and all that stuff. But Amy Adams to me is like Glenn Close back in like the 80s. She'll get nominated all the time, be a bridesmaid, and never get the prize. And it's a shame because she's really like, you know, an incredible performer.
Anything you want to add to that, Piers?
Well, as far as Amy Adams goes, if you look at her two big roles this year for American Hustle and for Her, could not find two more different characters, and yet she pulls both of them off flawlessly.
Well, let me play, since you love Sandra Bullock, Gary, I'm going to play a scene from Gravity for you, and this is Sandra Bullock as astronaut Ryan Stone. It's a film that co-stars George Clooney, and this is a scene where she's just floating in space. Let's listen.
Houston, this is mission specialist Ryan Stone. I am off structure and I'm drifting. Do you copy? Anyone?
And again, a scene from Gravity. And, you know, because I'm a radio person and I love sound, we were talking about this, Piers, before going on the air. I just thought the sound of this movie, even the soundlessness of the movie, was just so moving.
Well, and the combination of having total soundless moments of rampant destruction going on throughout the film, the scene where her space station gets torn apart behind her and you don't hear anything to set it up, it just suddenly starts disintegrating. Combine that with the actual soundtrack of the film, which the very first moment of it is unbearably loud and then quiet and then loud and then quiet. It's a great technical achievement.
That's Piers Marchant, and he writes about films for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, for 215mag.com, and for phillymag.com. Also with us, Gary Kramer. He writes about films for the Philadelphia Gay News, the Philadelphia City Paper, for Salon.com, and Cinadelphia. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. We want to know about the performances, the movies that you enjoyed this year that you think are Academy Award winners. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Let me just read a email from James from Vineland. I think Philomena is going to win. Don't bet against the Weinsteins. Gary, what do you think about that?
Well, I can see why he might think that, because the Weinsteins have a lot of power and influence, but I think it'll win. If anything, it might win a screenplay award. I sort of call the screenplay prizes booby prizes. They're sort of like, you know, if the sort of commercial engine wasn't so strong, these films would actually get the awards they deserve. And I think because Steve Coogan wrote the screenplay for this, and it's gotten a lot of positive acclaim on that end, that he has a shot. But I don't know, you know, you're competing against 12 Years a Slave, and you're competing against, for screenplay, now I gotta look.
That's right. Something flipping here.
You know, you've got...
screenplay, original screenplay, American Hustle, Blue Jasmine, Dallas Buyers Club, Her, Nebraska, adapted Before Midnight, Captain Phillips, Philomena, 12 Years a Slave, and The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, I mean, I think 12 Years a Slave will probably get that. I think it's the sort of the favorite in the sort of Vegas betting odds, but I wouldn't rule out Philomena. That could be very much a possibility. I just don't think it's got a Best Picture shot.
Let me get, it looks like Michelle from Fairmount to join us on Radio Times. And Michelle, go ahead, you're on the air.
Yes, this is less about the Oscars, and but it's relevant to your comments earlier on 12 Years a Slave, about Steve McQueen being a black Brit. And I've noticed this in the commentary about the movie. I'd like to point out that slavery is a part of the collective memory of the African diaspora, and no one seemed to have found it a curiosity that an American Jew would have made Schindler's List, because you brought up that comparison before. And so I also want to remind people that England was, in fact, a slaveholding country.
Sure.
And that continues to shape the way black Brits live in England. So I just want, when people talk about a black Brit making that movie, I want them to understand, too, that, again, slavery is part of the collective memory of people in the African diaspora. Most of us were descended from slaves brought into the New World, and I think that should be part of the commentary around the identity of the person who's making the movie.
Oh, fair enough. And we should add that actually Britain got, in a sense, got rid of slavery before the United States, just to add to that very, very tragic and terrible history that we have, of course. And Michelle, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Are there movies you think, Piers, that should be on any one of these lists, or let's say that should be on a list that isn't there?
Hold on, let me take a deep breath.
Yeah, go ahead. All right, go ahead.
Okay, my by and large, the Academy Awards this year, I wouldn't quibble with. I mean, I certainly, let me rephrase. I would quibble, but I don't have a lot of outrage with many of the award categories. Howsomever, the Best Picture nominees, which a few years ago went to 10 films, up to 10 films,
yes.
I should say. Now, this is 2 years in a row in which they have only selected 9 films. And in both cases, last year and this year, they have neglected to include one of the films that I think absolutely has to be included. Last year was The Master, which got shunned. And then this year, Inside Llewyn Davis doesn't even make the nominees. I don't think it necessarily should have won. But I cannot imagine a world in which that is not one of the 10 best films released in this country.
Do you feel the same way, Gary?
Well, I liked the Inside Llewyn Davis very much, and I think it's a really incredible film and a great performance by Oscar Isaac. But I look at it in terms of financials. CBS Films distribute it. They don't have, I guess, the money to wage an Oscar campaign, sort of like a lot of the independent studios. So it probably didn't have the commercial heft. And that goes back to the point about Philomena and the Weinsteins. You know, I mean, did you really expect to see Philomena as a Best Picture nominee? I mean, people like the film, but is it the best, one of the 10 best films of the year? I can think of 10 films that are better than it that weren't even nominated. So
give us one.
Short Term 12 was really good. I really loved Mud. You know,
me too.
These are kinds of films that should have been nominated in that sort of 10th category, if you will.
Did you like Fruitvale Station? I really liked that film a lot.
I did not. I think it's a great performance by Michael Jordan, and I'm sorry that he wasn't nominated, but I found the film to be very sort of manipulative in a sort of very commercial way that for an independent film, I thought it was a little too slick.
It's interesting. You liked it, did you?
I did. I admit that almost any film that has a small child involved, now that I'm a father, has the ability
to affect
you. A very
cute small child, too.
But I thought it did a very difficult thing pretty well. I guess I could understand why you would say it's slick, but honestly, Michael B. Jordan's performance overpowered many of my other mild objections to it.
Mm-hmm. I do want to play a scene from Her, and we've talked a bit about Amy Adams, but not much about Her. Joaquin Phoenix is Theodore. He's a lonely guy. He falls in love with his operating system. And here he is talking about relationships with his co-star, Amy Adams, who is his co-star, Amy Adams. Let's listen.
I even made a new friend. I have a friend. And the absurd thing is she's actually an operating system. Charles left her behind, but she's totally amazing. You know, she's so smart. She doesn't just see things in black or white. She sees this whole gray area, and she's helping me explore it. And we just bonded really quickly. I'm weird. That's weird, right? That I'm bonding with an OS. No, it's okay. It's weird.
Well, I don't think so. Actually, the woman that I've been seeing, Samantha, I didn't tell you, but she's an OS.
You're dating an OS? What is that like?
It's great, actually. Yeah. I mean, I feel really close to her. Like, when I talk to her, I feel like she's with me.
Are you falling in love with her?
Is that making me freak?
No. I think anybody who falls in love is a freak. It's a crazy thing to do. It's kind of like a form of socially acceptable insanity.
And again, a scene from Her, directed by Spike Jonze. That's Joaquin Phoenix and Amy Adams. I really love this film. I thought it was just a beautiful love story and gorgeous to look at, and the performances. I happen to be a big fan of Joaquin Phoenix, even though I know he's a little out there. But and I appreciated the fact that the camera was so close to their faces; you could really see them.
Yeah, the other award that you were asking about omissions before, and the other one that I think I would trumpet pretty loudly, is that Spike Jonze wasn't nominated for Best Director, because I don't think there's any other director could have made that film. He also wrote it, but it's made so much with his sensibility, and I think so much of it works because of his sensibility. I think that's a pretty glaring omission.
Go ahead, Gary. I don't think you agree with
us. I feel like
us.
I'm the critical critic
no,
here.
No, go ahead.
I don't like Her. I think it looks beautiful, and I think there's some good things in it. But it's one of those movies where I kept noticing his Sansa Belt pants and the fact that he loves to read, but there are no books on his shelves. And, he's got this sort of gig writing these sort of fake emotion letters. And it's all very sort of, I call it tweedious, which is twee and tedious. And the film is just very soporific for me. And I think it might get the screenplay prize. I really want it to go to American Hustle, that award, because I think that's really an original screenplay, and it's fun, and it's got some energy and verve and some really great twists and details. But Her, I think, has a real chance because it's new and it's different and it's virtual.
And we have a tweet from Lisa, who I put you alone again, Gary. Why hasn't Her gotten more praise? Well acted, visually interesting, amazing dialogue, fab soundtrack.
It's gotten incredible praise. I mean, the buzz out of New York Film Festival where it premiered was like rapturous, and maybe I didn't like it because I was expecting it to sort of set fire to the screen, but it didn't for me. It didn't put me to sleep, but it came close.
Well, we are talking about Oscar-nominated performances and films, and that's Gary Kramer along with Piers Marchand, our guest, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Tell us about some of the performances that you think are deserving, and stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, the historic home and designer craftsman shows, now through March 2nd in Valley Forge, featuring home services, fine art, traditional crafts, and furniture reproductions. Details online at historichomeshows.com.
Colm Toybean's novel, The Testament of Mary, imagines Mary's life 20 years after her son's crucifixion. She struggles to understand why Jesus' followers, men she considers misfits, believe he was the Son of God. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Colm Toybean. His novel is now out in paperback. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
What could you get 3/4 of the states and 2/3 of the Congress to agree to?
The Equal Rights Amendment.
Direct voting. Do away with the Electoral College.
Corporations are not people.
Propose a 28th Amendment to the Constitution on the 28th, along with us in the National Constitution Center, next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, Practice Fusion, a company helping doctors go digital with electronic health records, e-prescribing, scheduling, billing, and more. Information at practicefusion.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, getting an Oscar preview with Gary Kramer and Piers Martin. Piers writes about films for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, for 215mag.com, and for phillymag.com. Gary Kramer writes about films for the Philadelphia Gay News, the Philadelphia City Paper, for Salon.com, and Cynadelphia. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email with some of your picks at Radio Times at WHYY.org, and you can send us a tweet as well at WHYY Radio Times. Well, this is for Gary Kramer. The Moon Song from Her, nominated for Best Original Song, music by Karen O, lyrics by Karen O and Spike Jones, performed by Karen O.
Let's listen. Love Karen O.
Oh, go ahead, let's listen.
There's no thing I'd keep from you. It's a dark and shiny place, but with you, my dear, I'm safe, and we're a million miles away.
That's a song from Her, and nominated for Best Original Song. We haven't really talked about the performances for actresses in a supporting role. We've got Sally Hawkins in Blue Jasmine, Jennifer Lawrence in American Hustle, Lupita Nyong'o for 12 Years a Slave, Julia Roberts, August Osage County, and June Squibb in Nebraska. Let me go back to you, Piers. Who would you pick out of this?
Again, the prohibitive favorite, Lupita Nyong'o. To my mind, she had the best performance of this particular group. I actually would have liked to have seen Emma Watson for The Bling Ring. I thought she did a really credible job with an absolutely insanely incredible character. But even so, I think I still would have stuck with Nyong'o, who was really captivating.
Plays Patsy, yeah. The slave, yes, go ahead.
I think Jennifer Lawrence should kiss every voter, disarm them, and make them vote for her, because she's just so much fun in the film. But I agree that it's Lupita's prize. She gives a sensational performance.
Indeed she does. And yeah, she's a stage actress. My understanding is this is her first film, but she has performed on stage before. Well, speaking of Jennifer Lawrence, let me play a scene from American Hustle. Jennifer Lawrence plays Robin Rosenfeld, the wife of Christian Bale's character Irving Rosenfeld. The film also stars Amy Adams and Bradley Cooper. And let's listen.
Ho! Ho!
Another fire!
No, Danny, not that one. That one's empty. We gotta use the big one.
I told you not to put metal in the science oven. What'd you do that for?
Don't make such a big deal. Just get another one.
I don't want another one. I want the one that Carmine gave me.
Oh, Carmine. I want the one that Carmine gave me. Carmine. Why don't you just marry Carmine? Get a little gold microwave and put it on a chain around your neck. You want to be more like Carmine? Why don't you build something like he does? Instead of all your empty deals, it's just like your science oven. You know, I read that it takes all of the nutrition out of our food. It's empty, just like your deals. Empty. It's not bullshit. I read it in an article. Look, by Paul Berdour. Bring something into this house that's going to take all the nutrition out of our food and then light our house on fire? Thank God for me.
I've heard that a bunch of times, and it's still just hilarious. And I don't do actors, actresses, do they get Academy Awards for humor?
A lot of times the comedic performances are the supporting award, you know, kind of roles. I mean, that could be why Jared Leto, who's sort of so funny in the film, you know, if he doesn't win, I'll eat one of Rayon's hats. But you know, Jonah Hill is really hysterical in Wolf of Wall Street, and he's so unhinged that in another year, I think he really could have, you know, won.
Well, and that, these are the actors in a supporting role. Barkhad Abdi for Captain Phillips, I'm the Captain Now, Bradley Cooper, American Hustle, Michael Fassbender, 12 Years a Slave, Jonah Wolf, The Wolf of Wall Street, and Jared Leto for Dallas Buyers Club. What's your bet there, Piers, and then we'll get to our callers.
This one really is a mortal lock. I think it's Jared Leto. I don't think it's a horrible performance by any means. I do think the first scene that he is in, he is so over the top that you were very much worried for the rest of the film. But then he seems to settle in, and I would have to say that the scene he has with his father, the banker, mm-hmm. where he's wearing a suit and he's that really it was a very very emotionally wrought scene that I thought he did very well. I would quickly like to say, as far as this category goes, I was not really always the biggest Bradley Cooper fan, but I thought he was really, really good in American Hustle, and it'd be great if he could somehow get some credit for that.
Gary, you said that you found the Captain Phillips boring until the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And the last 10 minutes is incredible. I mean, I happen to like that. All the minutes of that movie, but the last 10 minutes is an amazing performance by Tom Hanks.
Yeah, I was really disappointed that Hanks wasn't nominated for that part. Again, it's a trauma scene, you know, his reaction to that trauma in the end of Captain Phillips. I staggered out of the theater after, you know, kind of napping. But I think that's what shows a performance in its quality. It's that he does it in such a realistic, naturalistic format that it doesn't feel slick and Hollywoodized. That's what made it so sensational. And I do think Barkhad Abdi is incredible in the film.
Interesting to see what he can do.
Yeah.
What he can do next. Let me get Liz from Center City, Philadelphia, to join us on Radio Times. And Liz, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My question is: will a film that's made for release on Netflix or Hulu or the like ever be considered for an Oscar, or must it be a film that's an hour and a half long to 2.5 hours and released in a theater?
The Academy rules say that you have to play theatrically for a week in either New York or Los Angeles within the calendar year. And this is specifically true for the short film nominees. A lot of them have actually four-wall where they pay to rent a theater for a week to show a film, even if it's 25 or 30 minutes long or 40 minutes long, so that they can get qualified. You can't just play a film festival unless, you know, and for the short films it is, you have to win a number of prizes on the festival circuit to qualify that way. So, you know, if you have a film that plays on Netflix or one of these other sort of streaming things, it won't qualify unless it has a theatrical release first. The Last Seduction, which was a Linda Fiorentino film many years ago, her performance was disqualified as a contender because it played on HBO before it played theatrically. And it killed her because it was the most sensational performance of the year, and she would have won the Oscar if it had been released properly.
Well, they do have TV awards that they give for good performances. Thanks, Liz, for the call to Radio Times. You can call as well. And again, that phone number, 1-888-477-9499. Gary, let me go back to you because I know you want to talk about some of the short films that you enjoyed this year.
Yeah, I really love the short film categories. They're kind of like the ones that nobody pays attention to, and there's some incredible performances. I know you can see the short live action and animation in the theaters right now and on demand and through other services. In the live action category, the favorite is The Vorman Problem, which has Martin Freeman and Tom Hollander playing against type. And it's, I think, because it has celebrities, it's going to win. But there's a film called Just Before Losing Everything, which is a half-hour French film about a woman who's fleeing an abusive relationship. And Leah Drucker gives an Oscar-worthy performance in this. It's a phenomenal short. And then there's a film called Do I Have to Take Care of Everything, which is so hilarious at 6 minutes. And short films, they have to hook you. Sustain it and give you a great payoff, and I think that film does. I've seen it several times. I laugh hysterical each time. It's got a great punchline. So I encourage people to try and see them. And I also really like the short animation films. There's one called Feral that's just the most beautiful film. And if it wasn't up against Get a Horse, the Disney film, which is sensational, in another year it would win.
How about for foreign films, Piers? What has jumped out at you?
Well, my favorite film of all films I saw last year was The Hunt. Thomas Vinterberg's really, really brilliant kind of scathing indictment of human communities, I guess you'd call it. It stars Mads Mikkelsen as a kindergarten teacher who's falsely accused of molesting one of his students. And the fallout and aftermath of all that with all these people that were friends of his from growing up. I thought that was absolutely amazing. All that said, I think Gary and I agree, Great Beauty pretty much has this one locked up.
Yeah. You also wanted to talk about cinematography.
Yeah, cinematography is an interesting category, and I think often it's regulated to the lesser awards, but it really is, to my mind, always one of the more important ones each year. And there's a really great and interesting lineup this year. Philip Lesord is nominated for The Grandmaster, which is absolutely stunning to look at. Emmanuel Lubezki is nominated for Gravity, which, say no more. Bruno Dibonel is up for Inside Llewyn Davis, Faden Papamichael for Nebraska, and then Roger Deakins for Prisoners. Prisoners is a film I really, Gary, to take a page out of your book, God help me, I hated this movie.
Oh, really? And you're nodding vigorously, Gary.
Yeah, I really loathed it. But it is shot impeccably well. And Roger Deakins is a guy who's been nominated 11 times for the Oscar. His career is absolutely amazing. He made Shawshank Redemption. He made Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. He made Fargo, Skyfall, True Grit. And he's never won. But I think, again, he's going to lose out for a 12th time to Lubezki for Gravity.
We have a tweet from Feldy. How about a mention of All Is Lost? And it is interesting, the Robert Redford pretty much standalone performance. Is that an omission, do you think, Gary?
I think he's good in the film, and I understand why it was dismissed. Again, it goes back to money. I think it had, Roadside Attractions, I think, did it. So, released it. So, they didn't have a lot of money to campaign for him. Maybe they thought because of who he was, it would just sort of automatically get in there, but it's such a crowded field. I don't think people expected American Hustle to get all four acting categories, and that may have squeezed out some of the people that, like Tom Hanks and Robert Redford from the Best Actor category. But I do think it's an achievement. J.C. Chander, who did Margin Call a couple years ago and got a nomination for that, so maybe they thought that would carry some favor with the Academy, but all is lost.
Well, we can't talk about films without acknowledging the work of Harold Ramis, who died earlier this week. He co-wrote and directed the 1993 film Groundhog Day, one of my favorites. And here's a clip towards the beginning of the film. Bill Murray is the miserable weatherman, Phil Connors, who has to cover Groundhog Day in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. Connors is doing a live report talking to his production crew, played by Chris Elliott and Andy McDowell. Let's listen.
This is pitiful. 1,000 people freezing their butts off waiting to worship a rat. What a hype. Sounds like they used to mean something in this town. They used to pull the hog out and they used to eat it. You're hypocrites, all of you. You got a problem with what I'm saying, Larry? Untie your tongue and you come out here and talk, huh? Am I upsetting you, princess? You know, you want a prediction about the weather. You're asking the wrong Phil. I'll give you a winter prediction. It's going to be cold, it's going to be gray, and it's going to last you for the rest of your life.
Oh, I love that clip. I love that film. Gary, you like that film?
Yeah, I love that film. I actually got yelled at in the theater for laughing
too much. Right?
And somebody said it wasn't that funny, and it was. I mean, there's a scene where Bill Murray's reading poetry, love poetry, great love poetry to Andy McDowell, and he says, only God can make a rose, and that just put me away.
How about for you, Piers? As you look at his whole career, Harold Ramis.
Well, Animal House is one of the first movies older friends snuck me into. It's one of the first movies I saw that really opened my eyes to the possibilities of the fun that you can have at college. So if for no other reason, I will always hold him near in my heart for that. But the Groundhog Day is also, as funny as it is, it really packs.
It's brilliant, too.
Yeah, it really packs a wallop.
Well, about a minute before we have to say goodbye, I know just a quick, shout out to some documentaries this year, Gary.
Yeah, the documentaries this year, 20 Feet from Stardom's the favorite, and I think that's going to win, and I think it deservedly does its job. I mean, Lisa Fisher, she's amazing. These backup singers who haven't gotten their due will get their due now. I think people are going to be disappointed that Act of Killing is such a strong film that most people I know who saw it walked out after 45 minutes. It was just too intense for them. There's a film that was shortlisted for the documentary Oscar, but it didn't make it, called First Cousin Once Removed by Alan Berlinger, which, if people can see, I really recommend it. It's about Alzheimer's, and it's phenomenal. But I think it's a strong category this year, and it would be nice to see an upset, but I think it's 20 feet from stardom.
Piers, do you have certain Academy Award rituals, or is it just the non-critics that get all fired up, or are you sick of the movies by now?
Yeah, I mean, I have to say I don't get terribly fired up. If the Oscars was an hour long and you could do away with the fake banter and they would just get on with it, I would be fascinated, but 4 hours is entirely too much as far as I'm concerned.
Especially when it's about midnight on the East Coast and you have to get up and go to work the next day. Well, Piers Martin and Gary Kramer, thank you very much for joining us today in Radio Times and getting us ready for the Oscars.
Thank you.
Sure, thank you.
Piers Marchant, film critic for 215mag.com and phillymag.com. Gary Kramer, film critic for the Philadelphia Gay News, the Philadelphia City Paper, and also Salon.com and Cinadelphia. And we do want to close things out with another song nominated for an Academy Award, and this is Happy.